So we're just coming up on the hour. We'd like to take a minute for a preamble, so to speak, and we'd like to first thank the folks here in the lodge for joining us in an effort to maintain a fragrance-free environment for the benefit of all those with sensitivities. So thank you. And then for those on Zoom, welcome. During the pandemic, it has often been comfortable and joyful experience to Zoom to these meetings. It is important to recall the ULT declaration. Philadelphia ULT meetings maintain anonymity, offer no crosstalk or side issues with personal anecdotes, and participants speak directly to the chairperson when called upon. These are traditions which are designed to welcome all to the study of the philosophy of theosophy without distractions of any social differentiations or personal attributes. Let us all work to maintain these declared traditions. And just as a matter of housekeeping, could we all please try to remember to keep our microphones on mute unless we're planning to raise our hands and make a contribution, have questions, et cetera. The following is the Declaration of the United Lodge of Theosophists. The policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of theosophy without professing attachment to any theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of theosophy and the exemplification in practice of those principles through a truer realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among theosophists, wherever and however situated, is similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching, and therefore has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers. The sole bond between its associates being that basis. And it aims to disseminate this idea among theosophists in the furtherance of unity. It regards as theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization. And it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes and who desire to fit themselves by study and otherwise, to be the better able to help and teach others. The true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. So welcome to our Sunday meeting here in the ULT in Philadelphia and on Zoom. To carry out the purposes of the declaration, the ULT carries on 3 meetings per week, such as this morning on a Sunday morning from 11 to 12, we have a talk, a panel, or a lecture, always with the presentation, a formal presentation of theosophical ideas and plenty of time for contributions, questions, and et cetera, discussion. This meeting on Sunday is from 11 to 12 noon. Should you come to the lodge, please know that the doors open at 10:30. All are welcome, doors open to all. Then on Wednesday evenings, we also have a meeting from 7:30 p.m. to 8:45 p.m. We're studying The Ocean of Theosophy by William Q. Judge. We're currently in Chapter 6, and that's every Wednesday evening. Then on Fridays, we have a slightly less formal, more of a roundtable discussion, which is centered generally on a reading that's issued the week before. We're currently in Echoes from the Orient, which is a pamphlet written by Mr. Judge with different sections. Currently, we'll be studying Section 12. Section 12 is Friday. And this is also a Zoom meeting. Wednesday and Fridays are Zoom meetings for now. It goes on Friday from 6:30 to 7:30 p.m. And it is there's a presentation. Sometimes we read the section together and plenty of time for discussion and investigating the ideas. The lodge is entirely sustained by voluntary contributions of time, money, and effort and service. All the meetings here are free and open to the public. Everyone is welcome without reservation. If one feels so moved to make a contribution so that we can continue to pass on these ideas to others as they have been passed on to us through the ULT Philadelphia for nearly 100 years now, any contributions of any kind are certainly gratefully received, but there are no obligations imposed or implied. So for our Sunday talk today, the month of December, the overriding theme for our Sunday talks for the month of December is cycles and cyclic law. And we will have a presentation on emerging into compassion with plenty of time for discussion and questions after that. So we will now have a fellow volunteer give us a presentation with the ideas emerging into compassion.
Compassion, it is a buzzword that has been used for eons. Politicians toss the word into their speeches to gain favor with the electorate. The corporate world engages in cause-related marketing to give the impression that they care about their communities. Some even ensure us the money raised through these various events is given good causes. Religious institutions talk about the compassion for their fellow man as they pass around the collection plate. Charitable organizations use slogans to guilt you into giving. Give or run for the cause because it shows you care. We have somehow come to be a society who associates giving money with compassion. On a more personal level, there are many people who believe feeling pity for someone or something means they are exhibiting compassionate behavior. We give to the local panhandler because the giving somehow appeases our guilty conscience. Yet compassion, laced with pity, almost always has its root in guilt and fear and carries a sense of condescension. For some, there is even a smug feeling of, I'm glad it's not me. There are others who equate compassion with sympathy. If I commiserate with you, then I am a compassionate person. So what is compassion and how do we define it? Compassion is a keen awareness of and sensitivity to the suffering one witnesses, coupled with a deep yearning to see it relieved. Compassion literally means to suffer with, which implies a basic mutuality in the experience of suffering. Compassion is loving kindness expressed in the context of suffering. In all the main religions of the world, we find some teachings concerning compassion and loving kindness, such as love your neighbor as you love yourself. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. In the United States, as in other countries, we have hundreds of philanthropic organizations actively helping others, providing food, clothing, medical supplies, protecting children and all others who are in need. Knowing the sad history of some lands, one may ask, how can there be so many manifestations of charity and loving kindness along with the walls of hatred and hostility? All this between races and nations that are destined to live side by side. One of the teachers of H.P. Blavatsky addresses that very question by the following statement. For it is humanity which is the great orphan, the only disinherited one upon this earth, my friend. And it is the duty of every man who is capable of an unselfish impulse to do something, however little, for its welfare. Poor, poor humanity. It reminds me of the old fable of the war between the belly and the members. Here too, each limb of this huge orphan, fatherless and motherless, selfishly cares but for itself. The body uncared suffers eternally. Whether limbs are at war or at rest, the suffering and agony never cease. But having deep knowledge of the divine potential which lies dormant in the human soul, he adds, since there is no hope for man, only in man, I would not let one cry whom I could save. The importance of this quality is expressed in the following quotation from H.P. Blavatsky in The Voice of the Silence, in which compassion is defined as the law of laws. Canst thou destroy divine compassion? Compassion is no attribute. It is the law of laws. Eternal harmony. Elias self. A shoreless universal essence. The light of everlasting right. And fitness of all things. The law of love eternal. The more thou dost become as one with it, thy being melted in it, its being, the more thy soul unites with that which is, the more thou will become compassion absolute. Is not this question and many more found through other theosophical books, trying to awaken in us to concentrate our study and practice on the development of true compassion? The knowledge of theosophy gives us a very good basis for demonstrating true analogy, correspondence, dialogue, and meditation practices, the truth expressed in the following words of wisdom by the Buddha, all of which deal with the essential attitude needed for the development of compassion and inner peace. Here are the unforgettable words of the Buddha at the opening of the Dhammapada. All that we are is the result of what we have thought. It is founded on our thoughts. It is made up of our thoughts. If a man speaks or acts with an evil thought, pain follows him, as the wheel follows the foot of the ox that draws the carriage. All that we are is a result of what we have thought. It is founded on our thoughts. It is made of our thoughts. If a man speaks or acts with a pure thought, happiness follows him, like a shadow that never leaves him. He abused me, he beat me, he defeated me, he robbed me. In those who harbor such thoughts, hatred will never cease. He abused me, he beat me, he defeated me, he robbed me. In those who do not harbor such thought, hatred will cease. For hatred does not cease by hatred at any time. Hatred ceases by love. Where can this love or compassion that eradicates hatred be found? It can be found deep within, because it is our own true nature, a latent power in man to be developed. But so long are we are filled with the self and its passions, desires, and fears, it cannot emerge. Let me read that again. For so long as we are filled with the self and all its passions, desires, and fears, it cannot emerge. The making of space for compassion to be further developed within us is the result of a long process of deep inner observation. We can combine this inner observation with a loving kindness meditation on the following words from the Voice of the Silence and remind ourselves of the many forms of suffering we see and hear about. Let thy soul lend its ear to every cry of pain, like as the lotus bears its heart to drink the morning sun. Let not the fierce sun dry one tear of pain before thyself has wiped it from the sufferer's eye. But let each burning human teardrop on thy heart there remain, nor ever brush it off until the pain that caused it is removed. In the teachings of theosophy, we learn that this situation of ignorance, separation, and illusion in which most of humanity is today is vital to the development of inner human consciousness. All sparks of consciousness must fall from a state of unconscious unity to a state of separation and the suffering that goes with it, so that they can return in some future, fully conscious, to the unity and wholeness which is their true home. Should we take comfort in the knowledge and let nature and karma do the work of evolution, leading after countless souls, eons of suffering, to that enlightenment after which illusion and separateness will be eradicated? Or should we awaken ourselves to understand and see that everyone who came to theosophy or to any true spiritual path must become sooner or later an emissary of nature and karma, without which the work of the evolution of human consciousness cannot be realized? Every human being is in his essence a bridge between heaven and earth. All who are even somewhat aware of being such a meeting point between spirit and matter, heaven and earth, are mankind's hope for change towards true humanity. The universe expects such people to take responsibility, to be their brother's keepers, and tirelessly teach and be models of love and wisdom. How do we and others around the world wake up to vigorous and effective action demonstrating the vitality of developing compassion for the happiness and prosperity of humanity. Let us focus in theosophy on the path of the heart, on these truths on which it is written in Light on the Path. These truths which are as great as life itself, are as simple as the simplest mind of man. Feed the hungry with them. The powers of compassion and wisdom are much stronger than the powers of ignorance and hatred. Thus being so, we should fill our minds with compassion, loving kindness, and wisdom, and relate these to all living beings together with a strong wish for their happiness. Never forget to send out the force of loving kindness to all sentient beings. The topic for today is emerging into compassion.
Unmute, please.
We have a question here or a contribution here in the launch.
The overall umbrella topic for this month has been cycles. So where does this idea of compassion then fit in to this idea of cycles?
So the question here is, if we're looking at cycles for the month of December, then how is it that emerging into compassion fits into this theme? Okay, well, when we talk about emerging into compassion, what is it that emerges? And the teaching is that compassion is not something within the human being that grows and develops. That's the interesting idea that can be learned about compassion. We can grow and develop our physical nature, our emotional nature, our mental nature. One can become, so to speak, more compassionate, but that's the interesting part of that is it's not because he develops compassion. It's because he develops himself more so to become the vehicle for compassion. Why is that the case? Well, it's the case because compassion is an aspect of our spiritual soul, our permanent immortal spiritual soul. So just as surely as wisdom and intuition are part of the spiritual soul, so are they akin to compassion. So it's a matter of growing into it. And this growth is not a process, it's not a miracle. It's not an immediate process that happens. It's a matter of learning, it's ebb, it's flow, it's making mistakes along the way. And we can investigate that. You know, sometimes we think we're being compassionate, it might not be the case. There's another hand in the audience. Yeah, please.
Well, the three fundamentals in one word each are deity, law, and evolution. And cycles come under law. And compassion is the law of laws. It, in a sense, trumps all the other laws. It is no attribute. It is a fact. Now, whether we realize that fact or not, it's up to each individual. Just like universal brotherhood is a fact in nature. It may not be manifesting all over, but nevertheless, it still is a fact. And it's up to each of us as students and inquirers to see the universality of these facts in order to realize them and then to make them a living power within ourselves, so that we can align ourselves and align ourselves with the law of compassion.
So the contribution here is that compassion is no attribute. Compassion is the law of laws. Is that coming from our computer?
It is.
Compassion is the law of laws. And so it makes sense that it would there would be a cyclical aspect of compassion, it being a part of the law and a permanent fact in nature that we can grow into and use or even be consumed by. Now, did the people on Zoom hear that sound? That was just, you did. Okay, so we have no idea what it is. Any other ideas along this line? Yes, MDW.
Well, isn't it the same case as it is with all of evolution, that we as spiritual beings have become encased in matter? We have evolved into matter, and that now we are reemerging, and we're reemerging into our spiritual nature. And this this reemergence or this uncovering of compassion is simply us becoming more aware of our spiritual nature, more aware or use of our intuition, but we're emerging into our true being, because if our true being is love, what we're trying to uncover within ourselves. If we love ourselves, we love everyone.
Thank you. This process of emerging, of the person emerging into compassion, let's use an analogy for this. If we use an analogy of a plant, a tree, what have you, that has been planted, it's germinated, it has begun to grow. And let's look at that as our personal nature. And this plant draws energy from the ground. There's water, there's nutrients, there's air that is breathed, as we understand, by the leaves, however that works, the photosynthesis. But what happens if there's no sunlight? No matter how much energy and other resources it gets from the local, from the lower quaternary, we could say, if there's no sunlight, the leaves will never truly develop. It will never develop fruit. It will never develop flowers. So it's the sunlight which we could use as, compassion is an aspect of the sunlight. It's the sunlight that provides a certain kind of energy for the plant to be able to grow, to flower, and to bear fruit. Similarly, the personality, if our consciousness, now we are never, we are the true soul, but where is our consciousness, our energy centered? Is it centered in our emotional nature, in our human intellectual nature, or are we able to get even higher than that? If we're centered in our personal, selfish, emotional nature, then how much growth is going on with the human being? If that's what we really believe, that we really are and nothing more than that. So it's a matter of where do we put our consciousness? And therefore, it's a matter of what ideas we hold to be true. In this idea of emerging into compassion is a matter of, we could say we are truly the spiritual soul, but in this incarnation, where is our awareness? Are we aware that we are the soul? Theosophies in the world, because mankind generally broadly does not acknowledge, does not understand, or is not aware that he is a spiritual soul. And so these ideas are presented to remind us and to open us up, to awaken us to the possibility so that we can grow in that direction and bloom and flower as such as human beings. Yes, SL, and then here in the lodge. Please unmute.
Going to that quote from the Voice of the Silent about the pain that causes suffering. The cause of that pain must seem to be ignorance. Ignorance of our true nature and the power we have as souls in evolution. So isn't that the purpose of incarnation, of the cycle of necessity? And it is said that the suffering continues until the lesson is learned. So there is, that we think, a connection with cycles, that that merciful law will keep bringing us back to the those situations, the pain of which, the suffering of which, forces us or compels us to find answers, to make changes, to merge into a better understanding of ourselves.
Thank you. So the contribution here is really, this is a process that has to go on for lifetimes, and it continues under what? Under the law of karma, which is continuously cycling back these lessons and opportunities for us to learn. Now, was there a...
It was addressed.
Oh, perfect. Okay. So what is it in the human being that would, you know, when we talk about compassion, what is it in the human being that prevents one from recognizing, from feeling, or from operating with compassion? Any ideas? Okay, a bunch of hands went up. So we'll start with in the red, please.
Just fear. Fear of doing the wrong thing. Fear of just, I don't know, the personal. It's the personal man, for whatever reason, has fear. Fear of maybe causing more harm than good. Fear of, well, if I put myself out, what am I going to have to give up? That kind of thing.
Okay, so the first contribution is, if someone is acting in such a way that is less compassionate than he could otherwise act, it could be based on a personal issue regarding fear. Okay, and there was another hand in the lodge.
We were just thinking, goes along with that, about lower mind, and is stuck in materialism, detachment. You know, like it was said in the talk. I'm so glad, if we're looking at a poor person, I'm so glad it's not me. It all comes back to me. Whereas we should, in regards to emerging compassion, we should be looking at others and lower mind. And as was said, fear, that comes from lower mind. And
So this is the second contribution in the row. It must have something to do with fear, with the selfish nature, with the I, me, my side of the human being. And SL, you had a contribution?
In the talk, it was given, many examples of compassion were given, but these are compassions, expressions of compassion from a personal point of view. And we think the focus of the title is to direct us to merging into divine compassion. And we can't begin to do that until we begin to think of others not as poor, miserable sinners, no better than human animals, separate. We have to begin to recognize the divine, the soul, the spiritual being in others as well as ourselves before we can begin to express that. And then we'll know how to express our compassion, not to impulsively do it.
Thank you. So then what we're seeing here is, it's one thing, you know, for a good person, an average person, to do something along the lines of being of service when he knows he's being called to do so. And to some people, that means this guy needs Jesus. And he goes out of his way, and that's the most compassionate approach that he's going to take. That's the view. Now, remember, what we've been talking about is, excuse us, we have a technical thing going on here. How do I bring that back?
Looks good now.
Well, we can hear and see you.
Okay, thank you. So, but that's still of the personal side of the human being, isn't it? So there, it's one thing to feel pity. It's one thing to respond to pity with some kind of an emotional obligation because we have that natural, normal human connection with other people. But if we're responding to a situation from our own personal basis, our lower self, and we're not saying our bad lower self, just our normal lower self in a personal way, then we're going to be looking at this situation to help this other person the way we think he needs to be helped, which is what we think should, you know, so one could say, you know, do unto others as you have them do unto you. And so there's good motive there. But is there right thinking? And the question is, how grounded in the personal nature is the individual who's trying to offer the compassion? Conversely, an impersonal approach to helping someone else through a problem by suggesting universal ideas, universal principles, taking it out of the personal stuff and just offering suggestions can be approached that, you know, sometimes being, you know, offering compassion to someone because it's your opinion of what should happen can be offensive to someone else. But if we understand the importance of being impersonal in our approach, then we're probably pretty much guaranteed to be a little more on point in terms of compassion, because isn't the source of compassion the very source of our impersonal nature, which is our spiritual soul? If we want to use that power, we have to use it in an impersonal way. Now, we think we saw hands here. Not so much. Okay. Yes, SL.
So, a very good idea there, but to take it from a particular example, we think one of the greatest sources of pain and suffering for a human being is the loss of someone they love very dearly, a parent, a child. How do we approach that kind of situation in an impersonal way without being cold and or appearing to be cold and detached? How would we help somebody through that other than our empathy and our willingness to listen? How can we help someone through that kind of suffering specifically?
So the question is, all right, so if we have someone who's lost a loved one and they're having a hard time, the best way, the most compassionate approach during that situation, well, certainly would, I mean, did it happen 2 days ago? Did it, you know, we don't know what the scenario is, but let's have some ideas along that line. Yes, in the back.
We think probably some of the worst things that you could do is tell somebody, well, you know, he's in a better place now, not suffering anymore. We think just being there, letting them know that you're there for them, maybe ask them, is there anything that, do you want me to talk? Do you want me to just sit here? Let the person dictate the conversation, the activity, or whatever. But we just really think, you know, but if somebody would say to me, well, you know, they're in a better place, it's like, but they're not here.
Thank you. So the contribution is, yeah, and it's not about the person who died in that sense. It's about your friend who you're sitting with. So the contribution here is, you know, identify as best we can with the feelings that the friend is experiencing in the moment. And isn't that, you know, in so many other languages, the word compassion literally is, it means to suffer with. And that's what it actually means in English too, even though the word passion is usually associated with desires and emotions. In religion and philosophy, the word passion can be interpreted to suffer. So when we talk, so you're suffering with the other person, and let them know that we're here for you. It must be terrible. We wish we could help. Let us know. Any other ideas along that line? Yes, MDW.
We think that the hardest thing for us to do is to be positive, to have a positive attitude. And that really means drawing on all your resources, because you are suffering as well with the loss. But the loss is only of this physical nature. There's no other loss. That person will always be with us. Will always be with us because of our interaction with them, and because they are a part of us in some way. So trying to develop a positive attitude with those that are suffering, you know, that may be just hugging them, that may be just holding their hand. You know, and I think as was said, you know, having sympathy. You know,
thank you. So the contribution here is, you know, ultimately, don't we want to somehow, some way try to alleviate them of the suffering, or try to help them out of it, help them to pull themselves out of it? And in order to get there, first we have to be with them and be accepted by them, and they have to recognize where we are and how we care, and we identify with them. And then, as was just suggested, offer a new idea, offer an inspiring thought, offer an idea that's worthy of in the moment. So when we talk about compassion, as HPB says, you know, it's not an emotion, it's a power of the soul. Well, a power of the soul to do what? It's a power of the soul, as we understand it, to be able to identify oneself with the conditions of another human being, and having recognized those conditions, to know what would be appropriate in the moment to be of assistance. And that is a spiritual move. That is a spiritual power. That requires spiritual insight. Yes, JCS.
I do have a comment, but there is also chat.
Okay.
You want to take the chat first?
That would be fine. Could we have it read, please?
Oh, there's three chats.
Oh.
Compassion is suffering with the sufferer reminds us of HPB's The Voice of the Silence, page 13. And the quote given is the one about the sun drying one tear of pain before you have wiped it from the sufferer's eye.
Thank you.
The second chat is, people don't feel compassion because of the hearsay of separateness. The moment one thinks that unity does not exist, that creates disconnection and hardness of the heart. And certainly that chat goes with the comment that the chair just made. And the third, to really help another person, one needs to put themselves in their shoes and then from there, give them the help they need and not give them standard help, because it is not a one-size-fits-all formula. That is the beauty of theosophy, because the truth will set everyone free. If not in this life, eventually they will find the path.
Thank you. And the chats are self-answered. We appreciate that. And then JCS, you had a contribution?
Yeah, what came to mind when you were describing that positive listening, where you listen with your heart, you're thinking with your heart, you may echo back to the sufferer, you know, this is what you're feeling. And then universally, what seems to comfort is to say, I've been there. And boy, isn't grief just like the ocean? It comes in cycles. And, you know, observing that sometimes the waves just nip at your toes. Another time you're able to surf on top of a wave. Another time the wave knocks you down. Sometimes it's a tsunami. That kind of natural correspondence seems to be universally acceptable and seems to allow the sufferer to say where they are in terms of those cycles of grief. And in that conversation, what emerges is the eternal observer in both, looking at a phenomenon of cycles. And that seems to bring comfort and unity.
Thank you. Thank you for the contribution. So it's, again, it's a matter of cycles, about identifying with the other and helping the other understand, I've been there, I experienced something similar. And it reminds me, that analogy of the ocean is universal and impersonal, isn't it? We raise it out of the personhood and invite consideration right into the universal law of cycles. It's to put things in perspective. It helps to put things in perspective. Yes, MDW.
Well, isn't that what's happening right now? We're having, in the cycle of this planet, of this earth, we're having, of the northern hemisphere, we're going into the deepness of night. We're going into the longest period of darkness. And then suddenly on December 21st, the cycle is changing and the light is beginning to appear again in longer and longer periods of time on the earth. So we have like a reawakening, and we have this this flush of giving at this time of year, or this needing to show our appreciation for each other. You know, it's sort of like, you know, a lot of it is masked in giving of presents, but the giving of one's love and patience and time is what we really are respecting and really need.
Thank you for the contribution. Yes, SL, please.
So as we move further into this month of December, a study of cycles, we'll see that this month is a commemoration or an honoring of the cycle of the sun gods, or the incarnation of divine, compassionate beings who helped out of their compassion suffering humanity, so much so that they were willing to descend into the darkness in order that they could help us. So what did they do? Well, they established certain spiritual truths for that cycle, which would be helpful for all those who could be in tune with them. And maybe that's something we can do in trying to impersonally help those that suffer, is listen to them, yes, see what they need, but find out what in their nature is a spiritual truth what they believe is something enduring that they have faith in and confidence in them, and direct them to that. Because the more they develop that confidence in a spiritual truth, the more they'll be free from their suffering.
And that takes insight. It takes insight. To do so effectively requires one to put oneself aside, to put one's preconceived ideas aside, to put aside one's personal opinion or approach to life, and just to see from the other person's point of view, how can we help in this sense? There's one particular example that we know of that HPB gave regarding compassion and the key to theosophy that had to do with Father Damien. And we probably all heard about it, but we'll just briefly address it, where she says that a young Catholic priest who served the lepers, he was a young Catholic priest who served the lepers of Hawaii. On Molokai, lepers were literally dumped into the ocean and left to fend for themselves without food or shelter or hope. Whatever supplies had been sent with them were thrown in the water, relying on currents to carry them ashore or the exiles to retrieve them. In 1873, Father Damien was sent to the lepers by his church for a time period of 3 months, and he was ordered not to touch anyone. He never left once he arrived. He used his carpenter skills that he learned in Belgium to build homes, churches, and coffins. He arranged for medical services and funding from Honolulu. Father Damien worked to restore human dignity and respect for life to each leper. He taught lepers how to grow crops so they could eat better. He provided medical attention for the wounds and sicknesses that could be healed. And when they couldn't be, he organized burial details and performed funeral rites so that the death might be seen with some dignity. And as we may all know, he actually stayed there and contracted leprosy himself. And what a difference he made for the people who were there to bring a sense of human dignity to the island. Yes, MDW.
So what drives compassion is desire. If we do not have a strong desire to help, if we don't have a strong desire to love someone or something or an idea, it'll never come to fruition. Isn't that so? I mean, a desire is really the fulcrum of our existence. And it says that booty or compassion is driven by desire.
So the question, what is it that does drive desire? Well, if one is willing to put forth the effort to make himself the better able to help and teach others, he's got to have a desire to do that. So in our nature, there's two sides to everything. The dual side of desire is the personal lower desires, which sometimes we'll call ambition for things and power and things of this world. But it's just a matter of consciousness and effort to raise one's awareness of life around us and to aspire, which is the higher use of desire, to aspire to be of greater service, to grow in certain ways, to be able to help and teach others. And this aspect of desire, this principle of desire used in its higher sense, is what drives the growth of the plant toward the sun and the growth of the human heart toward his more universal nature, to have a wider, broader consciousness that's open and available and therefore probably more clear seeing in certain ways, especially in important ways when there are those who need our help. Yes, in the law chair.
So one of the most compassionate ideas of theosophy is that we are not our bodies, that we do not possess a soul, but we are soul. We are soul beings, and that we are eternal, and that life is transitory. And often when someone passes away who does not believe this, it's it can be comforting to explain the theosophical view, not immediately after death, but as time goes on, to just say, well, that we're soul beings, that we really are soul, that we are eternal, that life is transitory.
Sure. Well, so the contribution here is, you know, when we're with a loved one or a friend, and they go through this experience of a loss, at the appropriate time, that's the right time to introduce these universal ideas, because they're looking for answers. If they're still set, not in the moment, but afterward, if they're not satisfied with the why, where, and who, and how, then they're probably open to some, literally a type of initiation into new ideas that helps them answer the questions they haven't yet answered. And if it brings them closer to the truth, then the act has to have been one of genuine compassion, it would seem. Yes, JCS, and then MDW, thank you.
So that takes us back to the content of the talk, the forum talk. It's a process of emerging, isn't it? We may start out in many circumstances thinking from the personal, maybe with some condescension, maybe in a self-centered way. But as we begin to consider what our motive is and what our basis of thought is, gradually across time, we move from self-centered to lesser selfishness to selflessness, or as near as we can imagine. And in that emerging, we go from sentimentality to true spiritual compassion. But it happens across time. It happens with cyclic repetition of practice of doing it. So we really can't condemn the beginning, the starting point, but be open to the vision of the loftier goal.
Thank you. So there's the distinction. The less selfish and more unselfish we become, which is a spectrum and a process, isn't it? And there are obviously cycles within that process. The more we're open to naturally responding in compassionate ways in the moment. Now, meanwhile, as we, as pilgrims, progress in that way, we can catch ourselves and we can ask ourselves, wait a minute, where am I operating from? If I see a situation where my response has anything to do with the taint of selfishness or condescension or glad it's him, not me kind of a thing, right there is an indication that we're operating from our lower nature. And we can choose to change that in the moment. And we can respond to ourselves. It's like, truly though, as a student, do I know that really I've been there at some point? And we can begin to see really a lot in ourselves, but also to just make something of the moment as a teaching moment for ourselves. and choose to respond. Emotions are a choice. Compassion is always present. That's the choice. But emotions can always be dismissed, especially in this kind of a situation. And then ask ourselves, you know, where he is right now, I've probably been there, maybe not in this life even, but I must have been there. If I'm a student of theosophy, we know we've been everywhere. And isn't that step one in the direction of being of service to the other? Thank you. And so, yes, it's a process. And then we have a question in the lodge, and that's right after we have another one on the net. MDW, please. No?
Well, no, we were just, you know, we have these signposts along the way that we find in our religions, Buddhism, or we all of that Buddha nature, and Christianity of that Christos within us, which is compassion absolute. So, I mean, we're, even when we deal with it, we deal with loss or suffering, that is at the root of our understanding that we are the light within.
Thank you. So let's remember that our understanding at its root is we are the light within. And is there one last quick contribution here?
Oh, that's all right.
No? All right. Yeah. So we are at the end of our hour. So with that, we'll close the hour, and we look forward to Wednesday evening. Do we have a volunteer for the part? Does anyone care to? We have it already. Okay. So Wednesday evening, we'll see you there at 7:30. Thanks for showing up.
Thank you, everyone. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.